Hello, and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. The deluge of announcements from the provincial and federal governments responding to the COVID-19 crisis over the past few weeks can easily leave a person confused. Employment subsidies, benefits, deferrals are a few of the key words often repeated by officials. But what does that all mean to you and me? Well, on today's show, I hope we can get through some of those answers. Joining me on the phone to help us sort out some of these new initiatives is Lois Cromarty, Executive Director of the Help and Legal Center of Northumberland. Welcome to Consider This, Lois.
Good morning.
Since it is the beginning of a new month, many people who rent will be on the hook for their payments. So let's start there. Can you help us understand what's going on with the announcements from the provincial government about paying rent?
Right. So because of the COVID pandemic, the province has taken some steps to ensure that tenants aren't evicted during this time. So that means that the Landlord and Tenant Board for the duration of the pandemic is suspending the issuance of eviction orders. And they're also suspending all hearings in relation to eviction applications unless the matter relates to an urgent issue like an illegal act or a serious impairment of safety. So for the moment, nobody will be, having an eviction order served on them having to leave their place of residence. That's for those places who are covered by the Residential Tenancy Act, which is for, by and large, most of the places that are available for rent in this province. But what that doesn't mean is that you are free from the obligation to pay rent. Just because there's no eviction possible at the moment doesn't mean that the obligations to pay rent are lifted. So if you can't pay your rent this month, it doesn't mean that you get a free pass. At some point, that rent will become due. Nothing has been proclaimed by the government in terms of some sort of rent moratorium or, free rent, that sort of thing. And so the question that we all have is, what happens when this eviction hold is lifted? And, how will people be expected to catch up on all the rent that they might have accrued owing during this pandemic?
I also understand, though, that there's been some back and forth about the fact that it's not necessarily that you can't be evicted, but that you have to be before some kind of tribunal before you can be protected from being evicted.
Right. So the Landlord and Tenant Board rules on everything related to tenancies, really, for those places where the Residential Tenancy Act applies. And as I said, that applies to most places that people live, apartment buildings, those sorts of things. Where it's not applicable, that is where perhaps you're just sharing a kitchen or bathroom with your landlord, for example. The Residential Tenancy Act doesn't apply. But even there, I believe most of the remedies that might be available to those circumstances to get somebody out of those places are still in suspension as well. That's my understanding. Usually in those sorts of circumstances, it wouldn't be a Landlord and Tenant Board application. It would be, some sort of civil action or asking the police to come and get somebody out of your home. Mm-hmm. And I believe the police, at least in Northumberland, as far as I know at the moment, are not assisting in those issues. Again, unless there was some sort of serious impairment of safety.
Okay.
At risk. Otherwise, for the ordinary tenant, you cannot be evicted from your place, whether it's in a COVID situation or not, without the landlord going through the Landlord and Tenant Board process.
All right. So what if I do if my landlord's giving me a hard time? What remedies do I have in there, or what can I do?
Well, the legal center, that's our work. We do help tenants. We give them their legal advice and information about what their rights and remedies are, and we would encourage tenants to continue to call us if they're having difficulties with their landlord. We are still functioning, I guess I'll say. We're not open to sort of walk-in traffic to through our doors, but we're still here. We're still answering the telephone and still available at the legal center to give people advice about what their rights might be in those circumstances.
Have you been receiving more calls lately because of all the things that are taking place?
Hard to say. It's a different type of call, I guess I would say. There are some things that are happening as a result of the COVID pandemic in terms of, you know, lots of calls about employment and what their employment status might be. There are still the regular sort of calls that we get about being denied this benefit or the other benefit and what should they do. But in terms of landlord and tenant board stuff specifically, we still are getting those types of calls. There are still problems with tenancies, whether it's trying to get maintenance or repairs done on a place where you live. Those sorts of things still go on. It just becomes a bit more difficult to try and get action because even the tribunals are in themselves having to find different ways of doing business in this COVID issue timeframe.
Okay. Now, if I'm a landlord, what's the situation for me? Say I have mortgages to pay. Can I get some kind of assistance? What avenues are available to me?
That I am not entirely sure on. I know the federal government did provide some details about a mortgage assistance program, but I'm not familiar with the ins and outs of all of that.
Okay. Now, what about my other bills? Say, like utilities, water, electricity. What's the situation there?
As far as a tenant is concerned, if those are bills in your name, you know, you presumably will still have to pay those. I haven't seen anything in any of the legislation changes that says that obligation to pay those bills is lifted, or that there's some sort of moratorium or lessening of the obligation to pay that. I know the province did reduce the hydro rates down to the lowest time of use, or they got rid of the time of use and they went to the lowest rate possible for hydro. I suspect, though, that they will have to look at what happens if people can't pay those bills.
Okay.
But I don't think that's been announced yet.
Okay. I do know that Lakeshore Utilities has a time of use rate has been suspended for 45 days, and they've banned electricity disconnects for non-payment. That has been extended to July 31st, 2020, and also that the ban has been extended to low-volume consumers such as small businesses, and disconnection notices can also not be issued until after July 31st. So on a local level, I guess there are some protections there as well. So that's good for that. Money is always critical, especially for those people who are on low income or those who are laid off. Let's start with people who are low income. What if I do find myself in a financial crisis and I'm on social services? What avenues are open to me?
Well, certainly Ontario Works and Ontario Disability are still programs that are still running. And in fact, the government of Ontario introduced additional funding for social services to expand the emergency assistance that the various municipal layers of government can provide through their Ontario Works programs. So that can be a help if you need some sort of extra assistance in this time, whether that's something that you've accessed in the past. You can certainly call your local Ontario Works office, the one here in Northumberland County, for example, and the provincial government has given the municipal government more money to deal with emergency assistance. The basic social assistance rates haven't changed, so social assistance is still social assistance, but and ODSP is still ODSP, but there are some extra funds available even for low-income families who are not already receiving OW or ODSP to help if they face an emergency situation where they can't meet their basic needs or shelter expenses.
Now, I understand that usually there's some type of written documentation that is supposed to be provided for social services to get Ontario Works or Ontario Disability Support Program. What's the situation with that? Do I still need to be submitting that or not?
Well, they've changed that in terms of payments to recipients will no longer be suspended because you failed to supply your income reporting card. Those eligibility verification reviews are sort of on hold at the moment. But that doesn't mean that when this is lifted, that you may not face some sort of overpayment in the future because of non-reporting of income at the moment.
Okay, so again, it's like the rent. I can't just think I'm going to get a free ride, that there's going to be somewhere down the road I'm going to have to balance the books.
There'll be a reconciliation at some point down the road, I'm sure.
Okay. Can I be cut off of my assistance if during this time?
Well, there's a tricky question. We've been getting calls from people who have, for example, applied for Ontario Disability and have been denied. Those things are still going on. I haven't seen anything that says that OW couldn't cut you off for other reasons other than failure to supply your income statement. I would presume those decisions could still be made.
What if I'm on Ontario Works and I take a job during this time? Say I've seen a lot of advertisements that grocery stores are hiring people, that kind of thing. Will I be penalized later for any money that I make?
Well, again, that's that income reporting thing, right? And while you're not going to be suspended for not submitting your statement, at some point down the road, there will have to be a reconciliation because, of course, earnings are income as far as Ontario Works is concerned, and Ontario Works is a geared income program. That is, the more money you earn, the less Ontario Works assistance you'll receive. And one of the things that legal clinics are trying to advocate for is, you know, expanding those earnings exemptions, especially during this particular crisis at the moment.
Okay, so it might be something we may see in the future or may not.
Right, and one of the other things that legal clinics are advocating for is, you know, a waiver of any overpayments that might happen during this time frame. You know, that's us advocating for mm-hmm. those changes. That doesn't mean that the government is actually going to go ahead and write those things into the legislation.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point. Now, another big topic these days is the workplace. And can we start off by talking about the rights when it comes to staying on the job when you don't feel it's safe because there's the potential of being exposed to COVID-19?
Certainly, employees or workers in this province have the right to refuse unsafe work. And there's a whole process through the Occupational Health and Safety Act to refuse unsafe work if the worker believes it's dangerous. The suspicion that the work is dangerous must be based on facts specific to your workplace. And, you know, that obviously applies whether or not there's a pandemic, that those rights are enshrined in the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And there's a process that employers and employees need to go through, including the Ministry of Labor, to determine whether a workplace is actually safe. If the ministry says it's safe, then that sort of clears the way for the employer to say you have to come back to work. Your employer does have the right to demand that you come into work if the work environment is safe. If you are healthy and the workplace provides an essential service, as outlined by the provincial government in that list of essential services that came out a couple of weeks ago, and if you to come to work under those circumstances, you could face discipline up to and including the termination of your employment. So there's a lot of factors at play here, including accommodation under human rights grounds as well, which is a little different than the unsafe work aspect of things. And then there's also the requirements of the self-isolation, for example, requirements under public health issues. That also impact whether or not you should be going to work or not. Those things about self-isolation, if you're exhibiting symptoms, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, what about if you are immune compromised? We've heard that term used quite a bit. What if I live with someone who is, or what if I live with someone who's immune compromised, say an elderly person with lupus or diabetes? Can I refuse work because I don't want someone in my family to become ill?
Well, I think that would have to be, that would be under the sort of the human rights line of the world. You're healthy, so it's if we assume that you're healthy and it's just your family member that's the one that has the issue, then you could be asking your employer for accommodation during this time frame.
Okay.
Under the Human Rights Act.
Okay. What do I do if I get laid off? Where do I go to get some form of income during this time?
Up until this point, up until the federal government announced that new benefits, the CERB benefits, the CERB benefits, you know, people could apply for employment insurance if they had that option. And now there's this new benefit.
The Canada Emergency Response Benefit, is that what you're talking about?
CERB, yeah, the CERB benefit.
Yeah.
So, either way, you can either have, if you've applied through the EI portal on online, or you can apply through the Canada Revenue Agency portal for the new CERB benefit. That portal, I understand, will be open as of April the 6th. In the end, what the federal government is trying to do is to make no distinction about how much benefit you receive, whether you apply through one portal or the other. So they're just trying to get more benefits out into the hands of folks. The CERB benefit is available to those who might not have had regular eligibility for employment insurance, self-employed workers, those sorts of things.
Okay.
And there's a different set of questions, I guess, that would be asked under the CERB portal that we haven't seen yet than what would be asked under the employment insurance portal. But in the end, that's where they're trying to streamline the two things together.
I can only apply for one or the other?
I think that's the intention, yeah.
You know, is there an advantage to one or a disadvantage to the other? Do we have any sense of that just yet? You know, what should I apply for under what sort of circumstances? Has any of that been sorted out?
Well, I think the federal government is still trying to sort all those things out. I think the idea is that people will not get less than the amount of the CERB benefit, that even if you're on EI, they're going to make up some sort of difference if you were earning, if your EI benefit rate, because that's based on your insurable earnings, if that's lower than the CERB rate, that your EI benefits will be bumped up to at least the CERB rate.
Okay.
So the CERB benefit at the moment is in place for 4 months, so 16 weeks. Employment insurance benefits might be available to you for a longer period of time because, you know, your employment insurance benefit depends on, you know, how long you were working before you got laid off, for example. The length of time that you can receive EI benefits is determined in a lot of cases by the length of time that you were employed before you were laid off.
Okay, so that's a critical factor then.
Yep.
All right, good. What's the responsibility of the employer to give me my job back when it's over? Is there any security for people?
I haven't seen anything on that, actually. That's a good question. I haven't seen anything on that, that there's any sort of obligation to rehire you. I haven't seen that in anything, in any of the resources that I've had on hand.
All right.
That's a good question.
If I am someone who is now working from home, are my rights as a worker the same as when I'm in the workplace because I'm working at home, or does it change because all of a sudden I'm working at home?
No, I think the expectations of work at home are the same as the expectations at work, right? That your rights and obligations aren't suspended just because you're working from home. So as an employee, are not changed because you're working at home, assuming that you're working at home with the permission from your employer to do so.
What about low-income seniors who may be facing hardships? What sorts of protections are they getting? What sort of supports are they getting that might fall under your umbrella?
I don't have a lot of detail on what might be different for seniors as opposed to anybody else. You know, a lot of the seniors' benefits are administered through the tax system, right? Including the amount that you get on old age security, for example, is dependent on your income tax return. So it's not, I haven't seen a lot of details on, you know, what changes that might bring to the benefits for seniors, especially because the filing deadline for income taxes has been pushed back to, you know, the start of June as opposed to the end of April. So I'm not certain if the government has got quite that part figured out yet. I haven't seen anything on that.
Okay. Now, what about if I was up for a trial or I had a hearing or a court date or I was about to appear before family court? What's going on there as far as that's concerned?
Well, family law is not something that we practice here, and we don't practice criminal law here either at the legal center. But I get almost daily updates from the court processes, the courthouse, in terms of what's changing. I guess my suggestion would be that you contact, the client should contact, for example, Legal Aid Ontario or the courthouses directly to see what's new and what's happening with their matters. I don't believe that they're doing sort of in-person hearings unless there's some sort of urgent nature along those lines.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk to me, and I appreciate it immensely. I hope that our listeners found this useful, and I'm sure that if they have any questions, they can contact the Legal Center of Northumberland and get some help from you guys.
That's right. Thank you very much, Rob.
Thank you so much, Lois. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we'll talk about the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County, so please tune in. While we are all busy self-isolating, it's important to remember the world has not stopped entirely. If you know of a good story or have an idea for a story, please let me know. You can email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com and include as many details as possible, especially contact information. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, you can also email me at the same address. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this Northumberland.